they can just pick up whatever, and I can just edit out just what we don't want to use. Just so we don't have to, you don't have to feel as though we're like going now. I think that's what I realized. A lot of the times when I know for Rogan, he'll just record and like, you know, have Jamie just go in there and like take stuff out and like edit just to get the, especially with guests that aren't like comfortable, they'll just like record it, like the I guess off air, and put that on. So that's what happening.
Yeah, that makes sense, man. I mean, it's not like there's some Facebook live video or anything.
Dude, if this were Facebook, like, oh man, I feel so old now because there's Facebook live.
Yeah, right. What do people use these days? Like, what do the youths use?
Way to date all this stuff. I remember when Facebook first showed up. It was like 2006. That was like 10th grade. And I remember how there was this guy who's like, hey, it's Hawaiian T-shirt day. And we're like, what? And he's like, yeah, Hawaiian T-shirt day. And didn't you see on Facebook? And we're like, dude, are you serious? What a loser. And like, you figured out, like, you knew to wear a Hawaiian T-shirt because of like something you saw online. Like back then is the 06, and now to see.
It is different. We are aging ourselves very hard here. But I mean, you remember when Facebook used to need, what was it, a university email?
Oh man, it was just for, like, to log in. Oh.
It was literally just for people who were, you know, 18, 16, something like that, about to go to college.
Yeah, that's really what the whole gist of this podcast is. It's just two 30-plus-year-old men just complaining about how things aren't the same anymore, dude.
How back in my days, things were so much better.
Like not to bring this up immediately, but just remember. Do you remember where you were on 9/11? Do you remember that?
Absolutely. Of course. Like, who doesn't? I was in, what was it? Must have been, what, 6th, 7th grade?
Okay, I was 3rd grade.
You're a little bit younger than me.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, I still remember. We were just watching the TV. The first one felt like it was an accident, right?
Yeah, we thought it was like, oh, they're hostages, and movies were like, oh, they're hostages. I thought it was just
some tragedy, right? Like,
oh, right.
Like some pilot, I don't know, fell asleep. I mean, back then I didn't realize how safe planes were, so the idea that a plane would just crash into a building was perfectly reasonable.
It was unheard of at the time.
We were what, like 10 at most?
Yeah, like the very impressionable age to have just horrible. Horrible things happen right before your eyes.
Yeah, and then the second one hit, and then, you know, that's when you realize something had gone horribly wrong.
Yeah, and I think there was really, like, because, you know, being a 90s kid, there was, like, an era. Like, we grew up, like, pre-internet, and then we had the internet, like, when we were little. And then when that happened, it was, like, everything changed because, like, it was recorded. Folks had like HD. You can still watch like HD video of when it happened. And like,
it's HD, but
well, for 2000 for 2001 standpoint, yeah, just
back
just
480p HD.
Yeah, of course. No, that's wild. And just seeing how, you know, 20 years later, how like sentiments have changed. Like, man, like I remember like back in the day, like that was like around like the Bush era and whatnot, where like you thought things were like really hot political now, like back then I bet they were like crazy back then.
It's hard to say sometimes because we were a little bit young to really know how the politics were. But I mean, the stakes felt lower, and then it felt like it got ratcheted up. I mean, I don't know, it's strange. Nowadays we make jokes about 9/11, you know what I mean, it's a different time, but even just plane traveling, how much it changed, how much additional security, additional hassle.
Yeah.
I always tell people, you know, before 9/11, us Colombians were the ones that used to get the random searches before the planes.
Oh, man, they got you all, yeah.
You know what I mean? Back before they got the Muslims, it was us they used to search randomly on the plane before.
It's like every 5 or 6 years a different race gets it. The Colombians got it then in the late 2000s. Nigerians like me got it with the underwear bomber, and like the whole entire country were like, dude, you had like you had like one job, don't embarrass the entire country. But like, no, he totally. So now everywhere I go, people are like, you know, chicken me for my underwear, but joke's on you,
man. come on, Nigeria, you got to have the Nigerian Prince scandal as the number one.
Dude, that was working. It worked. Look, look, I'm not, look, it still works to this day. It's undefeated in terms of scams, but the underwear bomb scam, he didn't workshop that one. That guy kind of went on his own and did that. But, you know, I think that opened the, it opened the world up to the fact that, like, hey, there's some crazy people all over the world. They're crazy people, like, just doing,
you know,
God knows what.
More than just crazy people, it's not, the crazy people aren't just in the movies. They're not just over in the bad countries, right? They're not Pablo Escobar over in Colombia or, you know, crazy terrorists over in the Middle East. You know, they're people that are attacking us.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Obviously, more recent, there was the Paris attacks. There was,
yeah, yeah.
I mean, now we got school shootings, you know. Again, we're at the point where it's...
Yeah, that's a trip, man.
You know, I still remember, what was it, Sandy Hook. My little brother was in elementary school at the time. Mm. And I remember all I wanted to do when I heard that news was, like, you know, rush to his school.
Yeah.
Make sure he was okay. It just felt unimaginable that somebody would open fire on little kids.
Yeah, like, you know, this is, you know, this is an entertainment podcast, but like in the movies you hear, like, hey, the number one rule, don't harm women, don't harm kids. And like, when, again, kind of like 9/11, kind of like that perpetrator kind of took all bets off on that one, because that was targeted. And I think, you know, it's stuff that we still deal with to this very day. And, you know,
yeah, this is supposed to be a fun podcast. We're sorry to all zero of our viewers so far.
Dude, we jumped right into not only 9/11, but then
school shootings, 9/11. I'm about to tear up and shit.
I swear, it gets better. No, but really, I think the reason why I even approach you about starting this podcast is, like, we just watch a lot of movies. We talk about a lot of movies and TV and whatnot. We have kind of interesting conversations. We don't agree on everything, but it's very unique conversation. And I just thought, hey, I couldn't find a better person to, like, bring on and just not talk about just movies, but, like, life and experiences. And, yeah, it's great to have you here, man.
Appreciate that, man. I appreciate you bringing me on here, bringing this equipment, getting this started together.
Yeah, man.
Shout outs to Cousin Chris for being my predecessor.
Yo, Cousin Chris.
Unfortunately, he had to move.
He went to another planet. He was called back to his home planet. Cousin Chris couldn't be here. But nah, he's awesome. The whole genesis of this. So yeah, shout out.
He's here in spirit.
Yeah, of course. I think just jumping right into it, I think I might have seen maybe the greatest sci-fi sequel of all time in Dune 2. Like, I look, it's a take. I want to come in swinging.
That is some bold praise.
I want to come in swinging, but no, Denis Villeneuve as a director just does not miss. Do you agree, man?
I don't know about does not miss, because I never watched that Blade Runner movie.
Oh, Blade Runner 2049.
I've heard mixed things.
I won't deny it. I did. People did have mixed things. But from my experience, I think it was beautifully shot, beautifully acted. Because, you know, if you get someone like Ryan Gosling,
he is incredible at just shooting scenes, creating. I don't even know how to describe it.
Yeah, he's able to paint a picture. Like, you know, the a screenwriter can tell you, can write what the scene is, but Denny kind of brings it all to life.
He brings these worlds not just to life, but in a majestic, epic way. Totally. Really gets you invested in the movie.
Totally.
Sometimes, I mean, really my main criticism of this latest Dune, not as hard on the first one, was that it was hard to know what was going on at times in terms of the action and such, but in terms of why these different factions were going at each other. Obviously, spoiler alerts for everything.
Yeah, a little bit.
You know, it's time to turn off if you didn't want to get spoiled on the movie. Definitely recommend going to watch it immediately.
Yes, this is an IMAX viewing or Dolby or Prime. I think we saw it in Prime. Just any kind of premium setting you can see this in, it's definitely worth it. The Denis Villeneuve seriously put all into this, and it's a part two. It's a follow up to the first Dune. So what do you think of the first Dune before you even get into the second one? Like, what do you think of the first one?
I mean, honestly, for both of them, I mean, if you remember, Dune came out right when the pandemic was ending.
Dude,
not even ending.
Kind of in the height of it, like,
not the height, when the end, movies were coming back to the theaters. For all of y'all who are trying to put that out of your minds.
Dark Ages.
The Dark Ages from a few years ago.
Did you know that they were... That was back when Warner Brothers was like, did this crazy... It was a very risky tactic. They decided to release movies not only in theaters, but also on HBO Max on the same day.
Simultaneous. I think Dune was the first one they didn't do that with.
I'm almost positive
they didn't release it on the same
day. Dude, we need a Jamie to fact check.
Right, we need a Jamie to fact check.
Look, if you're listening, listeners, if you want to be our Jamie, we can't pay you right now, but we can pay you in high fives, just great references.
We can pay you in high fives and props.
Yes, exactly.
Honestly, for both of them. You know, when people talk about how theaters are dying sometimes, how they're not bringing in the revenue they used to bring in, all this stuff, this is the kind of movie you need to see in a theater. Yeah. It is not, no matter how nice your home theater is, you might have your 78K whatever TV that you spend $10,000 on, whatever, this is still something that's not going to be replicated. Not just, I mean, the sound, the size, and frankly, the communal aspect of it.
Yeah.
Going to see a movie opening weekend, late at night. There's just something that is incomparable about that experience. You know, the old Nicole Kidman ad starts playing.
Oh my gosh.
And as corny as it is,
everyone's laughing, like almost damn near quoting.
The reason it's still there, the full ad is still there every single time, is because, you know, it touches at something true, right?
Right.
Some movies, right, you don't need to go watch some comedy movie, low budget, in the theaters, probably. You don't need to go watch rom-coms. You can. It can still be a fun experience.
True.
But, I mean, it still tends to be a more fun experience. But I understand if money's tight, everything's expensive nowadays, maybe that's not going to be your priority. Just wait for it to come out on Netflix or Disney or whatever else. But something like this, it's an experience, and it's something about the communal theater experience, you feeling so small in the face of that massive screen. It's truly an experience in a film scaled for the theater, right? It's not something, you're not just watching a big TV show. You're watching these epic angles, these epic shots, these high budget moments, you know, that are focused down in a way to really provide a 3-hour experience that's going to leave you satisfied, thrilled, exhilarated. However, it's hard to overestimate this movie. Yeah, it's not perfect. It's not Lord of the Rings, which is another, fantasy instead of sci-fi.
And going into that, I think it is kind of like, it does have like flashes of that, but everything you said and then some, I would say this, you saying it like the whole movie going experience is like, it's communal, it's experiential. Looking back, yes, that first Dune was released on day and date on HBO Max.
It was.
And, yeah, and it still happened to make about, you know, close to $200 million worldwide. Again, that's crazy on a movie that people had the option of going to see this movie in theaters and also seeing it at home, and a lot of them chose to go see it. And again, like Denis Villeneuve and his team, they really wanted just to take you to Arrakis, and you nailed it when he said like just the sound, the size, the scope of the movie. I likened it to like Dune 2. Now just going to Dune 2, I watched Dune 1 a couple days earlier. I remember I read the two books, Dune and Dune Messiah, like 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. But recently I watched Lawrence of Arabia, and that's another one where like a main character is out in the desert.
I was thinking Ben-Hur.
Ben-Hur walking out. I kept getting like feelings of like I think we just saw like Dune 2 is a movie that like makes me enjoy movies. I love the art of movie making. I love just everything that goes into it. And this is a movie that kind of reminds me of why I love watching movies, why I love the fact that people like spend a bunch of money making them, because you get stuff like this, people putting their all in, like from Timothée Chalamet to Rebecca Ferguson to Florence Pugh to Zendaya to MVP of the movie to Javier Bardem, like MVP of every movie, like they just like Frendo really brought it here and I just loved it. And yeah,
the performances were incredible.
Yeah, man.
You know, go into some more of the specifics. I mean, you know, some of the hype obviously goes to the sandworms. He over-delivered. You know, the sandworm was nice in the first movie. It was epic when it came out.
They really showed out here. Yeah.
They literally have people driving these sandworms across the entire planet.
It's like a bus system. And I love it.
It's like a train system.
Yeah, but it's a worm.
And I love this. Like sand surfing on the... Like, if you've ever watched Avatar, it's literally sand surfing, but on giant sandworms.
Yeah.
It's the wild... It's wild that they managed to bring something like that from the books, which I'm guessing... I did not read the book, so I cannot confirm, but I'm guessing that it was something like that.
Yes, this is... And you brought up Lord of the Rings. This is Lord of the Rings level of... When you think of an adaptation, because when you're reading... when you're reading the works of Tolkien and you're reading Dune, like when you read that, you're picturing in your mind what the author is writing and trying to convey to you. What Denis Villeneuve did and what Peter Jackson also did was they're able to turn words into like moving picture, and you know it's a testament to just their mastery of the material, but also the mastery of just filmmaking. Because Denis Villeneuve, just looking at Dune 2, I want to make sure I got this correct. Dune 2 costs about $190 million.
Which seems small.
Yeah. Oppenheimer costs about that much. And, you know, in a world where we're seeing, you know, the Infinity Wars and the Endgames having $300 million.
Now, what is Marvel wasting their money on?
They ain't got a hold of Denis Villeneuve, you know? Nah, but, like, I think, and last year we saw a movie called The Creator, which was made for, I think, half that amount of money, and with effects that are incredible looking. And, like Denis Villeneuve is, I think this is a movie that Hollywood needs. I don't want to get on that kind of a soapbox, but coming off of a strike, there seems to be a hunger now for, like, you know, where's a return to, you know, filmmaking with passion, filmmaking with a purpose. And, like, not to say that, like, look, I love film, but, like, there has been a little bit of lacking of that in Hollywood. Not to say nothing's been great, but something like this, like Dune 2, like, you can say it's been missing, right, from Hollywood?
I don't know if... It depends how you want to look at it.
This kind of filmmaking, because this level of filmmaking, care.
We just had Oppenheimer, which is different. It doesn't have quite the epic scale and shots. Obviously, it's not the high budget. I mean, it's high budget in its own way, but not in this way. Mm. But, I mean, Christopher Nolan does this.
That's his wheelhouse.
Like, he's someone that just his name alone. I mean, literally, Oppenheimer was a biopic. Right, it's a biopic about a historical figure, an interesting one, but not like somebody who everybody was clamoring to know every detail of his life.
Yeah, and it wasn't your traditional like summer blockbuster big. It had a lot of big names.
It had big names.
Yeah, it had big names actors, and big actors.
But literally, everyone involved, everything involved, all this was just because it's Christopher Nolan.
But Nolan's able. The Nolan, like Villeneuve, he has like that. They both have a gift of bringing the grandiose, bringing the gravitas to like something like an Oppenheimer or something like the story of Paul Atreides.
I agree. I definitely agree. I think my point more was that there are these movies if you're looking for them. I think part of what's happening, frankly, is that. You know, sometimes you get nostalgic and you get rose-colored glasses for the past. You know, you look back and the golden era or whatever, or you look back to our youth, right? I mean, yeah, there was something like Matrix that came out. There was Lord of the Rings coming out, all this stuff. But there was also, you know, Kangaroo Jack and, like, Bad Boys 3.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Disney VHS direct-to-video sequels.
I'll defend Bad Boys 2. Bad Boys 2 is amazing.
I mean, it's fun. It's fun, but it's just fun.
Part of the problem is
that audiences have gotten a lot more clever. Right, you can't just throw out a movie like some random Adam Sandler movie and people would just be like, oh, it's a random Adam Sandler movie. I'm just going to go watch and see what it's about. You know, before there might have been some magazines and some word of mouth and such. But nowadays you can get instant at the minute, you know, oh, hey, this movie's good, this movie's bad. Immediately, right?
You can get that, and we also live in an age where nowadays you can get instant entertainment everywhere. It's not just in the movie theater. You can, on our phones right now, we have a device where we can get entertainment at the drop of a hat. So, like, now the movies are now having to compete with, you know, something that's in our pockets while we're inside the theater right now. Like, if you're watching Madam Web and you don't like it, you can just pull out your phone and just watch Chappelle's Show right there. And now, like, Madam Web's now having to compete with this other form of entertainment that's honest. So I think now the audience has not only become savvy to tropes and like cookie cutter like things, but also there's the focus of the audience is now being pulled in much more different directions than they were 20 years ago, I'd say.
No, absolutely. But again, even then, what brings people to the theater consistently?
Spectacle.
Spectacle, but also, I mean, frankly, quality, right?
Quality always wins. Like, you're right.
Again, there's plenty of examples. Jordan Peele, right?
Yeah.
Dude had a sketch show, a funny sketch show, made some goofy-ass Matrix parody with a cat.
Keanu, yeah.
Right? That nobody really watched,
except
right?
Except me and, like, 10 other people.
Yeah, I watched it, too. It was a fun movie, actually. I recommend it. But it's not, like, any kind of masterpiece.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he comes out of nowhere, makes Get Out. Why was that movie successful? Yeah. It's not because it had the biggest budget or because it had the fanciest IP. It's because people went and watched it and were like, wow, this movie is amazing. You need to go watch it. I'm like, all right, because I have to go watch it now.
So one.
That's
so
it. Parasite.
I'm sorry
to interrupt you, Parasite is a perfect example. This is a Korean movie with subtitles. No effort made whatsoever to appeal to a particularly American audience.
Yeah.
And still wins Best Picture, makes a ton of money. Again, why? Because somebody told you at some point, hey, you haven't heard of this movie. Don't even watch trailers. Just go watch it. And that's all it took.
And because
you trusted that person's opinion.
Yeah.
And guess what? When that same person says, oh, hey, don't go watch Batman versus Superman. It's garbage. That's all you need to know. There's no amount of fancy names and special effects and big budgets and spectacle that's going to make up for somebody coming up and saying to you, hey, Batman versus Superman, that sucked. Or the Marvels, that sucked. Secret Invasion, that sucked. Why would I go watch it if it sucks?
Okay, so you think nowadays we have, like, there's more of almost like a buffer between us and, like, not as good content, you think?
Basically. There's more of a hive mind and an instant hive mind.
I get you.
You know, Batman versus Superman, actually, as an example, made a ton of money in its opening weekend. Or Last Jedi made a ton of money in their opening weekends and then collapsed afterwards because the word of mouth was so bad. Now people are getting even more savvy. They don't even wait to that first opening weekend. They don't just show up blindly.
Okay.
Right?
Okay, I see.
Right? I showed up almost blindly to Avatar The Last Airbender, the Shyamalan version. And oh my God, that was a horrific experience. Again, you have an experience like that where you literally waste 3 hours, 2 hours of your life in a movie. You're wasting your money, your popcorn,
shouts
all this stuff.
Shouts out to Shamhammer, man. Shouts out.
He's improved lately, but oh my God, that was a bad movie.
No, I see what you mean. And yeah, I think it's a mixture of both. I think it also kind of revolves around just social media. We have access to information. Some people just don't have time. They have so much money, so they're not going to just go watch every single movie. They're not like us where we see almost everything. They have to be kind of picky and choosy. But you kind of nailed it on the head, though. Good quality content, I think, could cut through all that.
You know, and it's obviously reductive to say that make good movies, right?
It's really hard to make a good movie, everyone.
But,
it's not easy at all.
You know, sometimes you get these executives who are clearly, you know, you make a movie like Battlefield. Again, sometimes...
Sorry,
you know,
Battlefield?
Or what was it? A Battleship.
Battleship, yes.
Sorry,
okay.
Battleship.
All right, with Taylor Kitsch. Okay.
Yeah, Taylor Kitsch. Movies like that, where it's like, okay, nobody's asking for these movies. Sometimes it can work.
Like a Barbie. No one asked for a movie about
Barbie is a good example.
A doll.
I think a better example, honestly, is either the newest Jumanji movies.
Oh, Welcome to the Jungle? The 2017 one?
Yeah, the 2017. Okay. Or Puss in Boots is a great example.
Last Wish was...
Literally nobody was asking for a Puss in Boots movie. Had a terrible opening weekend. Could have easily, you know, just been a huge failure for the studio. But guess what? People saw it and were like, hey... This movie's amazing.
This movie is amazing.
Go watch that if you haven't. It's an incredible movie.
But like nobody
all
watched
ages.
It.
I mean, they did afterwards.
Yeah, afterwards, but like a lot.
It took a little bit of time for the word of mouth to catch up.
And
right?
Like a lot of times, like what people don't understand is like, yeah, we have with the rise like of a Disney Plus and like Netflix going up, people are like, oh, I'll catch it on streaming. But
you know, I actually think Puss in Boots hit at least 200 million in sales. I mean, they had a long tail.
Puss in Boots?
Because again, It's an unbelievably good movie, right? I'm not saying it's going to win Best Picture for an Oscar, but it's the kind of movie that's just, you know, pure fun,
right?
Good messages for all ages. You know, it's great experience at the theater or
dude,
at home.
No, you're not. Dude, it made almost like $500 million. I mean, like $485 million.
Yeah, see, that movie had
amazing.
No business making that money. None of the features you think are going to hit. other than, okay, yeah, it's a name. It looked like a cash grab, frankly. It did not look like something I was excited to watch.
Right.
But guess what? It was unbelievable.
So what do you think for Dune? Like, because Dune made $82 million. It doubled the opening weekend of Dune 1. So what do you think Dune's legs will be? Because Oppenheimer
Dune's going to have good legs because, one, frankly, these movie XX screwed up. The strike went on too long. This was supposed to come out last November.
This should have been
performing for Oscars, competing against Oppenheimer.
I have another opinion. I think if Dune came out 2023, I think it wins Best Picture.
Ooh, I don't think it beats Oppenheimer.
I don't even think it's close. I
don't blame that opinion.
I don't think it's close. I almost don't think it's even a close like
really just
match.
Instant.
Just movie, just filmmaking.
Man,
but
you know what? I think I like this movie more than Oppenheimer.
There might be
but
another.
Oppenheimer just hits the Oscar sweet spot. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
But also it hits the sweet spot of going back to what we're saying. What Hollywood needs. There isn't. You know, people always talk about superhero fatigue or whatever comic movie fatigue. No, there's a fatigue of just mediocre films. Of mediocrity. I'm sorry. And this proves that like you can have really, really great action and sci-fi and really great story and have it be something that like can connect on and hit on all cylinders and still like succeed and hopefully makes
money. This has a lot of fantasy, a lot of lore. It's easy to get lost. But again, it works because the spectacle is there, because it's shot and acted so well, because they really, Villeneuve does a great job. Man, I'm telling you, every single time they ride around these sandworms, your heart starts pounding. It's thrilling. It's an experience.
Let's talk about that third act. Like, just the whole. Remember that big, like, silver orb that looks an awful lot like the UFOs that we see, like in real life. That you see, like
that kind of reminded me of
like spy balloons. It looked like this big giant silver spy balloon.
It looked like something like for me from Star Wars a little bit.
Amazing! Like remember, like how like when it came in, you saw like the cliffs reflecting off of like just stuff like that, and just like there'll be panels and shots that look like just works of art, and I can't go on enough about this movie. It was just amazing.
You know, one thing I appreciated, it is in one sense high sci-fi. You know, they're all in space. They got space witches. They got, you know, interstellar travel, all these things. But, you know, huge portion of the movie is just basically them fighting in sand dunes, you know, getting like into the nitty gritty with the Fremen.
Yeah, it's also, sorry to cut you, but it's a cautionary tale also of just having like a hero figure or a messianic figure. But like, it's one of those where like the hero of this, not to be spoiled, but just to go into spoiler, the hero is not doing things for like the noble reasons, which I thought was very interesting.
I think he originally thought he was doing it for noble reasons. But I think part of the message, and I'm guessing part of the message of the books, again, having not read them, it's going to have to speculate a little bit here.
Yeah, of course, give your take.
But it's, at the beginning, you're clearly wrapped up in the standard, you know, chosen one story, right?
Mm-hmm.
Hero's tale, the guy has to suffer and come back stronger and all that. You know, very standard stuff. And then, you know, this subversion comes from one. At first, he, like, no, rejects it entirely, says it's not him, says, you know, he's just trying to be part of the group. He's not really trying to be, you know, the Messiah or anything. But then the movie actively has him basically acquire superpowers.
Yeah.
I mean, effectively, that's what happens. Like, he gets fed a liquid that unlocks his power. He already kind of had superpowers, but now it just became a thing where, like
Super Saiyan now, yeah.
He could seem to be able to read people's memories and minds.
No, he can. He can read them and make them do and think stuff. It's pretty wild.
Essentially, and you know, he at that point kind of a switch flips where he starts to fully believe in the Messiah narrative himself.
And that's where
right?
you kind of
get... He's now convinced he's the Messiah.
Kind of get nervous there.
And then he's like, okay, you know what? No, I'm going to take charge. Now, before I was kind of, you know, don't call me any Jesus figure or anything. I'm not him. I'm not that guy. And then all of a sudden, it's, okay, no.
Show him paradise.
He's upfront about it. He comes up
to the center of all these brown folks.
Oh, what a great scene that was.
When he literally walked in the middle of all of them, where they're trying to give him the opportunity to be part of their crew. One guy is literally willing to lay down his life so that they can continue their customs. And he's basically like, no, screw y'all. I'm in charge. Anybody who wants to say otherwise, come here and I'll kill you.
Who's got something for me? Yeah. And what was funny is that, like, he was like, who's got something for me? Everyone was like, I got something for you. They all take their swords out. And
every
single
one. All of them were ready to get busy. Him. Like, they all thought he was amazing 5 seconds ago. Every single one person there was ready to kill him.
He walked in on their mass or their prayer service. So, yeah, of course. So.
And then, basically, he just shows off his superpowers and starts reading people's minds and stuff. And he's like, all right. Well, this guy can read my mind. I guess he's the Messiah.
Like Timothy Chalamet, he's an actor I've been watching for almost like 10 years. I remember he was the young version of Casey Affleck's character in Interstellar. Watched him in there. He went on to be in stuff like Call Me by Your Name, Beautiful Boy, Bones and All. But lastly, with Wonka, like, look, we're coming off of like when he did Wonka, we're like, okay, whatever. Like you're gonna try and be Gene Wilder's whatever, but he showed like. So much range in that. And then they come over to portray Paul Atreides. Timothy Chalamet is what, 115 pounds, I think? And like he was at able best. To, at best. And he was able to just, with just sheer just acting prowess, convince us that, no, I'm the Mujahideen. I'm the one running this. And like that scene where he addressed the council, where he like called everybody out, is like seriously one of my favorite scenes in a movie. I think it's super powerful. It just resonates a lot.
It is honestly impressive the way, because especially in the first movie, he kind of comes off as a snobby prince.
Yeah, he's pampered. Like, yeah, he's sheltered. Like, yeah.
Like, okay, he got like some fighting skills, but he's like literally 110 pounds. Like, you know, just like he looks like he's 15 years old, right? it's like, okay, what are you baby talking face. About the Messiah or anything? And then he wins the respect of these desert nomads who have to live in these impossibly, you know, difficult and rough environments.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And he impresses them enough where they're like, okay, now you're part of our crew. And frankly, not just them. He impresses the audience. Like, you buy towards the end that these people actually respect him and look up to him. You know, it's not just some guy that's there. Even though he looks like a skinny little wimp, so he has a certain physicality, a certain authority that he projects that gives it credibility.
Yeah,
right. He doesn't have to be this big, older, grizzled guy. He's somehow you take seriously. It's not like some of these, even like Harry Potter, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, he's the boy who lived. But, you know, the whole series of books, he's just a kid.
Right. Right?
At no point is he any kind of serious leader or anyone you should look up to. They kind of do towards the end just because, like, oh, you're the boy who lived. Literally just because they're supposed to. But in this one, you kind of feel like Paul Atreides / Timothy Chalamet earns that respect.
Okay, yeah, I can definitely see that. And I think kind of like Harry Potter, they just their characters are taken on a journey. Yeah, we've only seen Paul on this 2-movie journey, but seriously, he's been through a lot and there's been a huge character shift. So much so that when what happens at the end of the movie where he decides to basically betray Chani and go with Princess Irulan to you know, take the rest of the galaxy under his power, you really feel that. And like, not to go into Messiah for anyone, people who haven't read it, but you really do feel the ramifications of what Paul did in that throne room in Dune Messiah. Like, I'm very excited to see what happens with that.
He just makes himself emperor, pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah.
He literally basically threatens the emperor, gets him to come down, and then just, he fires nukes at the emperor's forces, has sandworms come in and does all this stuff, destroys their army.
And then makes the emperor kiss his ring like Godfather style. It's amazing.
Yeah. Like, he just made the emperor his bitch entirely.
Christopher Walken, by the way, he was great as the emperor. A lot of great Christopher Walken, Dave Bautista was in it. Austin Butler, who we just saw as Elvis. Fade Rotha, he's amazing. Like, again, this cast is spectacular. Stellan Skarsgård. A freaking Anya Taylor-Joy in a really cool cameo that, yeah, that a lot of people didn't know. Moment. Yeah. And in the books, like, she plays Paul's sister, and, like, she has a much larger role, but they, I like what Denny did. But anyway, just to wrap it up, Juan, like, so what'd you think? Like, so if you're going to give this, you know, we have, like, a, our rating system would be, like, a day one viewing. It's like, hey, go out and see this right away. Wait for it, maybe for Netflix, and, like, skip it. We'll be like, hell no, let's not see this. So day one, maybe wait for it on streaming or Netflix, or just flat out skip.
Man, for me, this is day one.
Oh, of course.
This is day one. This is the kind of movie where not only, I mean, honestly, it's not the kind of movie you can be spoiled at, I'll say.
Oh, yeah.
It, I mean, you kind of can, but the particulars of being spoiled and surprises aren't the point of the movie. The point of the movie is the performances, the shots, what you get to see and experience, right? Yeah, I could tell you every single part of this movie, front to back. Again, it's the surprises and the twists are not the point of this.
Right.
Frankly, I don't think Villeneuve is great at dialogue and exposition. He's more good at creating scenes than he is at setting them up.
Right.
Right. And it, you do lose yourself a little bit on some of these characters, what their motivations are, why they're there. What was her name?
Chani?
No, not Chani. The girl.
Lady Jessica.
The French girl.
Lea Seydoux?
Yeah, Lea Seydoux.
Yeah, Lea Seydoux. Oh, another great actress. Yeah.
She's a great actress, but again, she just kind of shows up and it seems like she's important, but...
She is important. She
you don't really know what she's doing in the movie.
Right.
Right? She just seems important because of her good acting and because of, like, meaningful glances and all this stuff, and she shows up in prominent scenes. But I have no idea right now what her motivations are, other than just kind of she's part of the Space Witches.
Gotcha.
Right? Yeah, so, yeah, again, yeah. It's hard to – I do think – it's a rare movie that's just about 3 hours long and somehow felt like it should have been longer. Okay. I had the opposite experience with Oppenheimer. With Oppenheimer, the last 40 minutes, I'm like, man.
You felt it.
This movie needs to end. Like, the atomic bomb went off, and then you suddenly realize there's a whole hour left in the movie.
Man, we ain't done yet. Okay.
This didn't need a whole other hour after that. I thought this movie was about to end. This is the opposite, where I looked up and I was like, oh my God, this movie's about to end. But I still have so much I want to see and explore and find out about. Please have another 30, 40 minutes.
Yeah.
It's day one viewing. You know, again, I could go down as an all-time classic.
Yeah.
I almost don't want to overhype it because it does have a few flaws. I wouldn't put it at the level of something like Spider-Verse from a few years ago. Or not a few years ago. Was it last year?
Last year. Yeah, last summer.
What was it, Into the Spider-Verse?
No, Across the Spider-Verse.
Across the Spider-Verse. Mm-hmm. See, that's one of the best movies I've seen in a few years.
Right.
Honestly, I mean, I'd put this above Barbie, but Barbie was another movie that's incredible. There was a lot of good movies last year.
Right, yeah, 2023, yeah, it's a stacked year. Yeah, I'll agree with that. This is day one viewing. I think this is one of the greatest sci-fi sequels ever. I think one of the greatest sci-fi films ever. This is really, I think it fulfills a promise of what sci-fi can be. You know, like, we got Star Wars kind of like showed us things we've never seen before sci-fi wise but I think what Denis Villeneuve's Dune movies have done, it's delivered on what that promise of what really good and really well-made sci-fi can be. And I just love just how Denny can like transport us to other worlds, not just with the set design, but with the acting and just everything in there. And I'm just really, I'm really, really excited for what he's going to do next with the series. This should be seen on the biggest screen possible. There are some, I think for me, the issues I had were kind of pacing issues and things that could have been either taken out / polished up to just help non-book people. If you read the Dune books, Even if you're a Dune purist, there were major changes, but changes that every change that was made enhanced the story. But I do agree that there should have been things that should have been made to make things clearer for the viewer. So I would agree with you on that. But yeah, it's definitely a day one viewing. Can't wait for Dune Messiah. But yeah, man, we've been gonna start wrapping it up here and are going on like 40 minutes. Jeez, not bad.
Yeah,
not bad for the first combo. Go. Yeah, man. Do more of these. Definitely going to have, you won't just hear our voices. Definitely going to try and get some other people on here, not just talk movies, but just life. I'm nosy. I don't know about you. I like asking people about just stuff, especially if they like are accomplished people. So we happen to know a lot of accomplished people with really interesting lives. So, you know, just get them on here and have them join the conversation.
Yeah, no, of course. And I mean, you know, we have people who play video games. We have people who watch lots of TV.
We have people who fight people, choke people out for a living.
We have people who watch a lot of sports.
Stand-up comedians. So we have aspiring animators. So, yeah, a lot of just really cool people we have in our friend group.
Definitely going to be a lot of topics to discuss.
Yeah, man. But, until next time, guys, we will see y'all laters. Adios.
Adios.